Hello and welcome to the DebtWire podcast. I'm your host, Aisha Kelsey, a reporter for DebtWire covering distressed debt and restructuring with a focus on the TMT sector. I'm glad to be joined today by Brooke Hitchman, Managing Director and Head of North America for Oaktree's Global Opportunity Strategy, and Jared Parker, Managing Director and Co-Head of North America for Oaktree's Global Opportunity Strategy. Brooke leads the investment team, while Jared oversees the Global Opportunity team's investing efforts across sectors including aerospace and transportation, energy and infrastructure. Brooke and Jared, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having us.
Let's start with this. The Oaktree Opportunities Fund 12 received $16 billion in commitments. Brooke, can you give our listeners some insight into the purpose and the strategy?
Thank you for the question, Aisha. Oaktree's opportunistic credit platform is a global strategy, and we invest across both public and private credit with a flexible capital mandate. And we've had a 36-year track record of successfully investing across multiple market cycles, generating consistently strong results through our disciplined and diverse strategy to deploy capital and focus on risk mitigation and proprietarily sourced deals. Two of the things that make us really unique is the depth of experience of our team and the scale of our platform. And those two key variables and principles enable us to create value in complex situations and to be able to execute quickly and gain access to a wide array of proprietarily sourced investments.
Great answer, Brooke. And turning to you, Jared, how does a diversified strategy across private and public credit position you to capitalize on the best opportunities in the market, given the current volatile macroeconomic environment?
The current environment is clearly very appealing for a strategy like ours that focuses on opportunistic credit. But stepping back, we really try to develop a program that's capable of deploying in any environment. So we define our strategy as being all weather, and our clients expect us to find interesting opportunities, whatever the market might be delivering to us. And the way we are able to access the market, no matter what the weather might be, is by being global. So Brooke and I have partners in Europe and all across developed Asia that are looking for the best opportunities in their domestic markets, which may not correlate with dislocations in North America, let's say. We also have the ability to invest in every sector in the economy. And as you mentioned, we have the flexibility to invest in both public and private opportunities. So we think that serves us well, serves our clients well in this all-weather approach. But definitely in the current turbulent times, we're finding lots of opportunities, including in sort of our bread and butter of opportunistic credit on the liquid side.
And you've talked a little bit about the current macroeconomic environment. Given the elevated rates, tariff uncertainty, and market volatility, how are you reevaluating your existing investments and what steps are you taking to safeguard them? Brooke, maybe you could start us off.
I would say the three factors that drive resiliency in our portfolio are, number one, that we focus on what we call good companies with bad balance sheets. It is easier to fix a bad balance sheet than it is to fix a bad company. And when we invest in companies that have strong moats, that have high barriers to entry, they tend to be able to be more resilient during periods of time of dislocation. The second factor is we focus on large companies. Large companies tend to have more diverse supply chains. They tend to be able to manage through dislocation better. And that's why we focus on bigger companies. The third factor, which I'd say is actually the most important factor, is that we focus on the top of the capital structure. So we invest in instruments and parts of the capital structure that have a high margin of safety. And so there's a large equity cushion that exists that gives us that downside protection when there are market dislocations like there is today.
I would just add, really what Brooke is saying is our portfolio is preemptively safeguarded because we're investing at the top of the capital structure in high quality businesses, usually in the public situations at discounts to face value, to par. And maybe to add one other thing, we run a very diversified portfolio. So our funds are invested in, when they're fully deployed, in hundreds of different companies.
In this environment, what specific covenants are you looking for in terms of protection when you're looking to get involved in a company?
Yeah, good question. So I would bifurcate it between new money opportunities where we're able to write the document. In those situations, we're looking for maintenance covenants, and we're also looking for tight baskets for liens capacity, for restricted payments capacity, et cetera. But we will invest in debt securities that have bad documents. But the way that we mitigate for those poor documents is twofold. One is that we buy at a discount to par, giving us both downside protection, but also upside convexity to compensate us for the lack of high quality document. And the second factor is to control our own destiny. We accumulate large positions and we partner with other like-minded firms to be able to make sure that we're always in the majority group so that we can really control our own destiny when there are situations with bad documents where the company is likely to go through a liability management exercise.
And it's important to note, in this environment, what kind of sectors are you looking at in terms of more caution and paying more attention to, given everything that's been going on?
As Jared mentioned, we cover every sector of the economy. And so we break our coverage up into 8 industry verticals. And the 2 most impacted industry verticals are industrials, as particularly logistics firms and automotive firms. Then 2nd, consumer, and within consumer, especially retail. But that doesn't mean that we aren't willing to invest in sectors that are dislocated by tariffs. One of the things that makes our strategy unique is that we are willing to be contrarian and to lean into sectors that are facing headwinds. And that has been a key to our success all the way back to the founding of our strategy 36 years ago. And over our full 36-year history, we have been able to identify attractive opportunities in dislocation, everything from the TMT bubble bursting in the early 2000s to investing in financial institutions during the global financial crisis to investing in travel companies that were dislocated in COVID. And all of those events created situations where there was what we like to call babies out with the bathwater, or situations where there was good companies that had strong foundations that were temporarily impacted by short-term events.
Thank you, Brooke. And Jared, on the flip side, what sectors or industries that you're thinking are the safe havens in this point?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So we're recording this on April 29th. It's been widely reported that starting in about a week, we're going to see a precipitous drop in imported goods into the West Coast and shortly thereafter into the East Coast ports. And we'll have to see if the reaction to the reality of less cheap goods available for the U.S. consumer will precipitate second-order derivative consequences and maybe lead to a recession, maybe a shallow recession, maybe even a deeper recession. If that happens, I think safe haven is sort of out the window. And while Brooke pointed to the companies that will have the most direct, acute first-order impacts, I think we would expect in a recession consistent with history that all sectors would see a drawdown and a repricing of asset values. If that happens, to Brooke's point about babies out with the bathwater, there are really 2 sectors in my mind that will stand out as really attractive for their defensive nature. One will be the healthcare space, and the other would be enterprise software. And fortuitously for us, those happen to be the 2 sectors where the largest LBOs were done over the last 5 years, and therefore where the most amount of secured outstanding debt exists. So that should be really fertile ground for a strategy like ours.
And to Jared's point, our existing portfolio, the largest concentration is in healthcare today, and enterprise software is also a large sector. And those are 2 areas, and I'd throw in a 3rd, telecom, where they tend to be very recession resilient because you're typically still going to go to the doctor even in a recession. You're typically going to still pay for your broadband internet bill. And you're typically, as a company, going to maintain your software license for mission-critical enterprise software.
Just like both of you mentioned, sitting here on April 29th, we've seen some different phases. Even this year, we've seen some times where the market was not moving at all. And we all know that there's a lot of dry powder out there, whether it's public credit or private credit. How do you see market competition, given that we've had some times of slowdown and everything that we're predicting for the months ahead?
Well, there's no question that there's a lot of capital out there in both private equity and private credit. And that's been widely reported. What I'd say is in our market, we see a lot less competition and a lot less capital. And if you take a step back, the period of time post the global financial crisis from 2010 really until COVID in 2020, that entire decade, it was a period of time where interest rates were very low. SOFR or LIBOR averaged below 1% for that entire decade. And the Federal Reserve increased its balance sheet significantly, putting a lot of capital into the capital markets. As a result of that, rates were low and spreads were low. That was a very challenging time to invest in the distressed debt market. As a result of that, if you were able to survive through that desert, if you will, of a decade of lack of dislocation, then what you found was there was less competition once you made it through the desert to that oasis of higher interest rates, higher credit spreads, and higher quality companies. And so what we see today is, although the supply has increased fourfold of BBB and lower debt since the global financial crisis, we actually see fewer competitors today than we did 20 years ago.
That's a very interesting point. And what has changed in the market in terms of sophistication? Do you think you're seeing more demand in different structures? And what have been some of the structures that you've been seeing more lately? Jared, maybe you can start us off.
At a high level, we've seen is greater demand for credit. So we've come out of a very long period of ultra low interest rates. And even though credit spreads today are at roughly the 50th percentile, with base rates back up to more historically normal levels, all-in returns on performing credit in high yield and levered loans is offering about 8 or 9% today. That's pretty attractive for most institutional investors against their internal benchmarks. You know, Howard's been writing about this since his sea change memo a couple of years ago, and I think that's been reflected in the broader capital allocation community as greater demand for credit, starting with performing credit, but particularly also in more sophisticated areas like private credit, asset-backed finance, and of course, where Brooke and I sit, in opportunistic credit, each of which I think can offer some higher returns than what's available in the index markets for high yield.
Thank you, Jared. And as we're wrapping up, I wanted to end our conversation with an outlook question. We started the year off with a lot of volatility and uncertainty. Given the macro environment, what is your outlook for the U.S. credit markets as a whole? I know it's a hard question. We don't have a crystal ball. But do you think that you will be busier on the public or the private side this year?
I think you highlighted the market environment keyword, which is uncertainty. And I think we do have to recognize that the current landscape is more uncertain than your typical environment. And as a result of that, it is critical that we focus on what we do best, which is investing in high quality companies at the top of the capital structure with downside protection. And I think the two areas that we are going to be the most active in this environment are, number one, rescue financings, where companies, as a result of the dislocation, need capital and they need it quickly. And we can provide that in size on the timelines that they need, as well as in liquid credit, where there's going to be opportunities to buy into credits at a large discount to their intrinsic value. And I would say those are the two areas that we expect to be the most busy.
I would just add, we certainly don't have a crystal ball, but I will make a prediction, which is that it will be a very active and a very good year for Oaktree and our clients. And the reason I can say that with a high degree of conviction is, while we don't know what the economy is going to do, we don't know what the Federal Reserve will do with rates, we can look at the options. And we can say that if the economy is able to somehow brush off the current uncertainty around tariff policy, let's say, and continues to grow, rates will probably stay high. And at high rates, many companies that issue debt in the ultra-low environment will have challenges refinancing their debt. So that's one possible path. There's another possible path, which is we go into some sort of recession and maybe rates will come down, but we'll also have much lower corporate profits. And again, I think companies who have issued debt will face challenges refinancing their maturities and meeting their current obligations in terms of their current interest coverage. And then there's a third possibility, which has been widely talked about around stagflation, where we may have a paralyzed Federal Reserve because the economy is slowing, but inflation is not tempering. And so we have this double whammy of corporate profit shrinking, potential recessionary environment, and also elevated rates. And again, that would be a very prosperous time for a strategy like ours to be deploying.
Well, Brooke and Jared, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you for taking the time and coming into our office.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of DebtWired. As always, you can subscribe or download every episode via Apple and find thousands of articles with insights, research, and more from our team at DebtWired.com. See you next time.